Hey readers, I'm Anne Bogle, and this is What Should I Read Next, episode 61. Welcome to the show that's dedicated to answering the question that plagues every reader. What should I read next? We don't get bossy on this show. What we will do here is give you the information you need to choose your next read. Every week, we'll talk all things books and reading and do a little literary matchmaking with one guest. Next week, we are celebrating the one-year anniversary for What Should I Read Next, and this is the first of two special anniversary episodes. If you've enjoyed the show over the past year, the best thing you could do for us is to pop over to iTunes and leave a review. Please visit whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/iTunes to share the reading love. That's whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/iTunes. Today, we're talking to the very first guest of What Should I Read Next, except that you've never heard him before. That's because the first time we recorded the show, it was on my iPhone, in a moving vehicle, in the middle of nowhere, and that guest was my husband, Will Bogle. That's our lost episode, because that file got trashed a long time ago. But this time, we're bringing him back again for the first time. Let's get to it.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
William, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Here is why you were so great to be on the anniversary episode. You'll remember this. I might have talked about it on Instagram. Maybe. I don't think I've talked about it on the podcast. But the idea for What Should I Read Next was born about 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. But I didn't actually record a sample episode until we were driving in the same vehicle through the middle of rural Pennsylvania in October 2015, I guess. We were on our way back from New York City. The kids were in the car, and we had the rough format hammered out. Three books you love, one book you hate, and what you are reading now, and I would tell you what you should read next. But I'd never actually tried it with a live guinea pig, and that was you.
I remember that, but I didn't know you were recording. We don't typically record with kids around.
Wait, we totally recorded, and we might have... Did we play it back in the car? I don't remember.
I hope not.
I still remember your hate. I don't remember your loves.
I understand now what everybody has a hard time coming up with a hate. It's tough. So I'm really curious what my old hate was.
Did I give you advance notice before we recorded it in the car? Because I don't recall you having a hard time coming up with a book you hated.
What was it?
It's on your list for
today. Oh, really? Let's get into the show.
You're consistent, if nothing else. Okay, so I do mention you sometimes on the show. So you've never been on the show, but you kind of have, because I talk about books I have encouraged you to read, despite your maybe initial aversion to said titles. I'm trying to think of an example right now. Probably some books with girly covers I tell you to read anyway, because you have read before I have some books that I really ended up loving, like Chris Cleave's Everyone Brave is Forgiven. Like, I've told the story about how you were reading in bed going, and reading like dialogue out loud to me, and how that hooked me on wanting to read the story before, or even really hooked me on the story before I'd read the story myself. So this isn't your first time on the show, even though it's your first time on the show.
Glad to be back.
Okay. So listeners know you as my husband and not as a real person. So can you tell us a little bit about your real life, not married to Anne bio?
Yeah, my real life bio. So I'm the business guy at a software company. I've done a number of very different businesses. I was in banking, had a stint in coffee, which keeps us, when we travel, fair, visiting the coffee shop, visiting the bookstore, and now I'm into software. It's an interesting mix of both fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah, I've gotten some good sci-fi recommendations from your coworkers, actually, just to hammer all the stereotypes about working in software.
There's a few readers there. A couple of them. We trade quite a few books back and forth.
Have you always been a reader, or was that a requirement when we got married a long time ago?
You didn't say as much, but I was reading pretty heavily. I don't know. Okay, so I think I started enjoying reading latter part of high school. I don't know if I actually read books during college other than assigned stuff, but that was plenty. But yeah, we packed the suitcases even for our honeymoon, so books kind of flowed. It helped living next to a library too. Between you and easy access, I've been reading quite a bit.
I'm not sure if I've mentioned that before on the show, but we lived literally next door to a library for the first, how many years we were married?
13.
Yeah, it was a long time. It was awesome. I still miss that. Even now we're like 1.2 miles away and it's 1.15 miles too far. Oh, it's so sad because it really spoils you. Okay, so what happened in late high school that turned you into a reader? It sounds like you weren't one of those kids reading books under the covers with a flashlight.
No, I did have that under the covers experience, but I was already, I don't know, 16 or 17 and had my own room in the basement where no one could tell if I had a light on. But I don't even know why I picked it up. I had The Firm, and I had been going through it for, actually, I don't remember. So there was one night that I finished the book, and that's actually the only thing I remember about reading The Firm. I have no idea how long it took me to get to that point, but there is a spot where it is just on a runaway train to the ending. And I think Tom Cruise is literally running through the movie. I got to that spot, and at 10 o'clock at night, I was just like, okay, it's a few more pages. Well, I'll keep going. Well, and I just wrapped the whole thing up that night. It was late, probably 2, you know, something like that.
So can we call that the book that made you a reader? Because I like stories like that.
I know you do. yeah, probably. I mean, I remember doing like the library reading challenges in the summer and stuff like that as a kid, but I definitely, that's sort of a spot where I was remember picking my own books and something longer than a short, you know, kid's biography or YA type stuff. Did they have YA back then? When you're reading it as a kid, you don't think of it as YA. It's just a book.
No, if there was that shelf, my mom probably would. Well, you know what? My mom gave me Free Rein pretty much. I wouldn't say she kept me away from it, but she might have if she'd known. What role does reading have in your life now?
It gives me something to do while you're reading. But I think it feels a lot of the same. I think we keep fairly busy. So it's a nice kind of end of the day, or sometimes Sunday afternoons, just sort of kick back and have a couple of quiet minutes on the couch.
Okay. I have a question for you. Laura Vanderkam has this theory that there are supply side readers and demand side readers, and supply side readers will read whenever they have a great book. So if somebody hands them The Firm and they're totally hooked on the story and they can't put it down, they'll fly through it and they will make time to read. But demand side readers, they don't need to have a great book to read. They will go out and find a book if they don't have a book to read because they like to be reading all the time. It's just part of their lives. Which one are you? I don't actually know the answer. I'm very curious.
So supply side. And I'm trying to think of what it is, but you've caught me a couple times reading a book and going, wait a second. Why does your bookmark look like it's at the end of that book that you just started? And I can't think of a great example right now, but it's definitely, I will make time for the speedy, fun read. We have plenty supply of books around this house. So I don't have want for like finding a book, but I don't find a lot of time for it unless it's something I'm really into.
Okay, so in getting ready to recommend books for you for this podcast, I've been like combing over the shelves and I've realized how many books you have read that we've been able to talk about together in the past year. It's kind of a lot. Like, let me think. Like there was The Nest. There was definitely Everyone Brave is Forgiven that we've already talked about. There was All the Light We Cannot See. Mm-hmm.
Flight of Dreams. I read that.
Oh,
that
I forgot you read
this
that.
Summer. Yeah.
About the Hindenburg. Yep.
Dark Matter.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, you talked me into that one because you read that at the beach right when it first came out, and it took me 4 more months to pick it up. I can see why you liked it. Okay, what
I think
else?
It was still, that was one of your urgings, though. The Boys in the Boat was a great recommendation. I don't know, that was, I think I read that last year.
And who read Every Anxious Way first? Was that me or was that you? I think that was you. You talked me into it.
That was definitely me.
Okay, I think, so that's the book that has a vinyl album on the cover, yep. And I think that came, and you were like, ah. Oh, a man book.
Isn't there a category for the reading challenge that's you pick it up because of the cover?
Yes.
I'm not doing the reading challenge, but that would be my, except I already read it. But that was definitely like, it's a white cover with a record on it. I don't know what this is about, but I'll read it.
I might have finished the book before I realized the pretty symmetrical design was an album.
not a real strong tie-in, you're saying?
I'm saying I wasn't the target audience, but I still enjoyed it, and I like to find a book like that. Okay, so today we want to stock your shelves for the coming year. Actually, I really hope it's more like the coming month.
When you say stock my shelves for a year, like I worry about how many books you're going to pile on.
Three, or actually maybe four. I have a bonus pick in mind. Are you ready to talk about your books?
I'm ready.
Okay, so you know how we do it around here. You tell me three books you love, one book you hate.
I know how it works.
Awesome. Did you have a hard time coming up with your loves and hates?
I think you told me I had too many loves. So paring down to three representative books was tough. Of course, hate is hard. I came up with one, but I'm curious. You said that I may have hated this book a year ago also.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Let's start with your favorites. What's book one?
So this was easy because I've read it like 10 times.
Are you serious?
Oh, probably, yeah. So Jimmy Buffett has a novel called Where is Joe Merchant? It's as ridiculous as all his songs, and super fun and really fast read. So it's a great beach read, summer read. I frequently
For me? Because I'm skeptical.
Have you never read this?
I've never read this book.
Really?
Yeah. Is that okay?
We'll see who's recommending books to whom.
Is the podcast over now?
So Jimmy Buffett, I seriously, I think for a while after we were married, I took it to the pool like every summer. Read it once.
Did it take the whole summer? Please say no.
No, okay. It's super fast. It's probably 400 or 500 pages, but it's a fast read.
How long ago did you read this book for the first time?
I know I was first given a copy in high school by someone we both know with a ridiculously large bookshelf in his closet. But I don't know if I read it then or not. So definitely college.
I can't imagine what a Jimmy Buffett novel would be like. So can you tell us a little bit about the story? You don't have to give us a plot summary, but just tell us a little bit about... I just can't even. Okay.
You don't even know where to start?
I don't know where to start.
It starts with a typical Jimmy Buffett sounding character. He's a beach bum, I think a pilot. He is a pilot. And there is...
All the bad jokes are coming to mind, biting my tongue.
I thought you were going to say all the bad lyrics.
There
are a lot of stories or plot lines, I guess, characters in this book that are actually familiar if you've listened to much of his music. But I don't know. He's down on his luck or bad in love or something like that. And then there is adventure and intrigue with a Joe Merchant is a rock star who has disappeared.
Really? Because he sounds like a sailor.
I can't even think of it. No, he's the Joe Merchant's the rock star. I cannot think of the Jimmy Buffett guy's name.
That's okay.
I need to read it again.
Apparently. Maybe spring break. We got a ways till summer. Okay. Do you think I would like it?
No.
Do you think I'd appreciate it?
You,
Do you think I'd admire the way it was written?
No.
So well, even if maybe it wasn't my favorite. Maybe in my beach bag for next year.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't take you more than an afternoon. Okay. So, yeah, it's a fun, quick read if you're into quirky adventure, beach, island hopping sort of, adventures.
With the rock star disappearing, I can almost imagine that being a Veronica Mars novel, and I like those.
Oh, it's close to Veronica Mars.
Really?
Well, only in the puzzling together of things that have happened, and this is Florida beaches, not California beaches, but yeah.
That's okay. It's something to go on. Something to go on. Okay, what's book two?
So the second one is also, I don't know, madcapped or it's ridiculous, but The Ballad of the Whiskey Robber. This one happens to be a true story, though, so...
I recommended this to Meredith in episode 11, I think. And so this was given to us by a friend, and it sat around for a long time before either of us picked it up because, as I warned Meredith and many readers since and before, this book has one of the ugliest covers I have ever seen, and the story just sounds weird.
Is the cover the Neighborhood Watch criminal drawing?
But with no teeth and maybe a mustache.
I thought the cover was great.
What? What? Are you serious?
We're looking it up. Hang on. Oh!
Is that a great cover?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Okay, go with that. How's that?
I think the colors are dreadful.
I'm blocking out the objectionable...
They're chartreuse.
Chartreuse?
And Minute Maid Orange. And we're looking on the screen. I think they're actually worse. Do we own this book or did we lend it out?
I think we lent it out and has not come back.
Oh, it was that good, people. They needed to keep it. Okay, so I think what that means is you are the target audience and I am not.
Who read it first?
I don't remember. It's been a long time.
It has been a while. I think I've only read this one once, but this is a true story. So this is 90s Hungary. There's definitely a lot in the geopolitics of that area that's very different, and this is just a ridiculous story about a hockey player who starts robbing banks, and it's almost like Pink Pantherish in how bumbling the cops or government are in tracking this down. And it's actually written by a Sports Illustrated writer, and so there's a heavy like hockey component. There's a good bit of sort of what's happening in that part of Europe in that time. But also it's just this really, funny. Can bank robbers be funny
and happy? It just feels like such a almost giddy, gleeful, can you believe what is even happening kind of story. It's just fun to read. And I'm not into hockey or bank robbing.
Yeah. I said I did banking for a number of years before. I read a book while working at a bank called Robbing Banks. I had to not take it to work anymore, but it was like a history of bank robbing, and it started with like people that dug, you know, walls when they had dirt floors. They would dug under the walls when they had dirt floors, all the way up to some of the more famous bank robberies. There was one in, I think, L.A. There was a Bank of America, and the two guys had like full bulletproof vests and assault gear and stuff like that. This is not like that. Like it's fun, and you end up rooting for the bank robber kind of deal.
Yeah, this could never be a Nicolas Cage movie.
It should be a movie. Maybe other people would like it more if it was a movie.
But I don't think anybody would believe it. I mean, what would it be on a par with? I mean,
that's the best thing about it.
That it reads like a novel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost too bizarre to be true. Okay, something else I really liked about this but also kind of gave me the creeps was knowing that the big, like, shootout at the end of the book happened in Hungary, like, in the same square where we got some, like, fancy Hungarian pastries when we were there in 2001. Like,
oh, yeah, and it wasn't the time frame. Like, it wasn't that different.
It was not that different. So it sounded so, like, of a different era. Like, the description says that the thieves learn their skills watching dubbed episodes of Columbo. Like, it just feels like an episode of Car 54, actually, is what it feels like.
I am not a Car 54 expert.
I've seen every episode because my dad loves it. But it feels like that, just so bumbling and endearingly incompetent. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Okay, what's book three?
So book three is definitely different from the last two, as ridiculous and madcap, I guess, as they are. But this is a book three is completely different from the other two, but also fairly in line with the kinds of things I read. It's a book called Worm by Mark Bowden. Most people would know Mark Bowden from Black Hawk Down, but he also wrote this book about the Conficker, what is frequently referred to as the Conficker virus, that was probably 5 years ago or more, was a big deal that people were worried about the computers getting viruses and all that. If you care, it's not a virus, it's a worm, which is why the book is called Worm. But there's a whole history of how the government responded to this, how private citizens, mostly security experts, sort of figured this out. There's some really funny details, like a security expert that gets invited to the FBI and he wants to show them his presentation, and they take a thumb drive and just plug into a computer, and he laughs at them and they're like, why are you laughing? And he says, it's in the presentation, because that's a really terrible way to transfer viruses when you don't have control over those things. It now being in software, some like really scary stuff about, wow, there are people out there doing things that are way more advanced than we're prepared to deal with.
Okay, so that sounds really interesting. And I remember thinking it looked fascinating when you were reading it, I think on the beach. So it's always a good sign when you have nonfiction that you could read on the beach. So I'm wondering, do you think I'd enjoy it? Should I read it now?
Oh, it's definitely still pertinent now. I think you'd like it. The interesting thing about it is I don't know that anything really ever came of it. So this is a very complex, whatever, virus infection, and it spread like crazy. But and it was set on a timer. So checking for instructions, everybody expected something terrible to happen. And I don't know that it has, which of course leads to all kinds of questions about what was the intent? What were people trying to do with it? But I think now people talk about security and not just hacks, but more of these botnets where they get control of your computer and just don't really do anything until they need to use lots and lots of power and lots of machines to attack something. So I think it's interesting in that sense still today.
I know you finally came up with a hate. What was it?
Well, I wouldn't say I finally came up with. I had a book and then wasn't sure that was such a good idea. But it's Lone Survivor. And the reason that I feel terrible about picking this book is the true story about a Navy SEAL team that was pinned down in Afghanistan. And only one of the – it was at the time the biggest Navy SEAL casualty event ever, and made a new movie with Mark Wahlberg and the guy from Tim Riggins, the guy from Friday Night Lights.
Really?
Yeah.
Texas Forever.
Texas Forever. So it was only an okay movie too. It's an amazing story. So part of the reason I feel bad about picking it as a hate book
is because it has a 4.7 on Amazon. Does that surprise you? That surprises me.
Yes. Also, it lists a contributor. So all along my beef has been he should have gotten a ghostwriter or at least someone to help him with it, because it was written by the Navy SEAL. And it is a great story. I've read a bunch of Navy SEAL books. I think Navy SEALs. A bunch of military books. So Black Hawk Down, which was great, a lot more complex than this. But so that's Mark Bowden that we were just talking about. Fearless, which is Eric Blame, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
And then I was reading Navy SEAL books back in, say, high school, and it was so there's definitely almost a genre for that kind of war story. Mm-hmm. But this one, I just really felt like he could have used a writer to tell that story. Even Krakauer wrote the story about Pat Tillman. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I thought – for as important an event and as amazing story as his survival was, it would have – somebody else could have done a lot more justice to it.
Okay. So amazing story, but the book didn't do it justice.
Correct. And again, the movie was nice, but it's a little hard to pack all that into 2 hours.
Yeah. What are you reading now?
Right now, I'm reading Deep Work, which you have set aside for me months ago, and it's sort of been at various of levels on the To Be Read stack. But finally got into it, and I don't think that was like part of a new year plan. I just had the time at this point. But it's about work, and particularly doing important work and setting aside the time for getting involved in a task versus constantly being distracted and moving from thing to thing.
Yeah, so this is Cal Newport, and I've read his other stuff, especially So Good They Can't Ignore You. I've always liked his content. I really like the writing in this one a lot more, but I've always thought he had really good information in his books. Yeah, so he talks about how the currency for the current generation is going to be learning how to pay attention, and in some cases relearning, because we're so distracted. We distract ourselves with social media and tasks of chipping through email instead of going into the cave for 3 hours to make something important. I appreciated it as just it was a nice kick in the pants for me.
Well, and for me, because I manage people who do what should be deep work. You and I talk about the maker versus manager schedules, mm-hmm. and I'm definitely a manager. So I'm reading it sort of in two ways, thinking, how do I help the company be better at providing space for deep work for the developers, but then also realize that a lot of what I do is bounce back and forth. So how do I then carve out time for myself to do deep work?
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, so far I'm probably halfway through, and he is also a computer scientist. So a lot of the stories and stuff are he didn't talk a lot about computers, but they're relatable, and I understand the space pretty well about why you need that kind of thing. But he also talks about psychiatry and journalism and some other stuff. So it's got good anecdotal type stories as well as, he calls them rules, but I guess tips on how to do this.
Okay, talking about it makes me want to read it again. I really like that one. And this would be a good time of year to read or reread a book like that.
Well, and you read it months ago. It's been sitting on my stack for a while. So.
Well, if you just read me the good lines, maybe I won't have to read it again myself. I can read something else and get half the benefit. Well, what do you want more of in your reading life?
Maybe just more reading. I don't keep track of my books. I'm going to for 2017 because...
How are you going to do that?
In a bullet journal.
Yay! Quick plug. For the Modern Mrs. Darcy Book Club, I am teaching a class on bullet journaling for book lovers on January 18th. So that's free for all members. You can sign up at members.modernmrsdarcy.com. It's going to be super fun. We're putting the finishing touches on it right now. We're showing you the basics of bullet journaling in general, and then lots of creative ways you can get more out of your reading life and track your books and get motivation and encouragement and habit tracking by using your bullet journal and bookish specific ways. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll give you the shortcuts in advance, will you?
I don't think I'm going to go that deep.
I'm glad you're going to check your books, though.
I'm just going to make a list. Of course, it's easy for me because I don't read nearly as many books as I think a lot of your listeners or book club members do.
You don't need to block out 50 pages.
No, it'll be pretty short. But, you know, I go through spurts. I mean, I'll knock off 4 or 5 when we go to the beach, but then I'll have a month where I don't make it through a single book. Some of that I think is choosing the books that I'll get engaged with. Mm. You gave me 11, 22, 60. This is terrible. 3, 4. This is terrible. That's terrible. The Stephen King book. Okay. Yeah. 11, 22, 63. It's like
900 pages.
Yeah. It's 900 pages, and it was all very readable, but I probably could have been 4 books. And I would have been fine with reading one of them.
So momentum is important.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't, going back to supply and demand, I'm definitely more on the supply side. So I need something that I can get into. And, momentum is very, key to keeping me going, more on the supply end of my reading time.
Okay. More tracking, more time to read, more momentum.
I have the time.
Less West Wing.
That would help.
Yeah. Okay. So we're almost to season 7, and we keep saying that we'll start going to bed early and waking up early.
It's Netflix season.
It is. It's totally Netflix season. Okay, so I have ideas for what you should read next, or with one example of what I want you to read next. Those might be slightly different things. We'll get to them right after the break.
Every day, our world gets a little more connected, but a little further apart. But then, there are moments that remind us to be more human.
Thank you for calling Amica Insurance.
Hey, I was just in an accident.
Don't worry, we'll get you taken care of.
At Amica, we understand that looking out for each other isn't new or groundbreaking. It's human. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
William, welcome back.
Thanks. What have you got?
Okay. Well, usually I like to tell guests what I notice about their books and the patterns I see and everything, but I feel like I know your taste better than most. But yeah, you want interesting books with, you have a lot of information in the books you like, as a general rule.
As a general, yeah, I actually used to only read nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And
a common tale.
Yeah. So I've gotten away from that, but yeah, still very information heavy.
Okay. So I want stuff that's kind of maybe dense, not in a, you know, not in the boring way, but in a way where a lot is packed in. I'm really keeping momentum in mind. You want stuff where the plot moves forward, even if it's a plot to rescue a Navy SEAL or create a computer virus to take over the world. We want the ball moving forward. How does that sound?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Okay. I also want to recommend books that I've been wishing you'd read for a long time. For your own good. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Book one is Magic and Loss by Virginia Heffernan. What do you know about this book?
It has a black cover and has been in our house for several months.
It has a really cool cover. I recommend if you can find a copy of this book in hardcover in a local bookstore in person, it's a really cool cover. It's very textured. It's kind of shiny. It really stands out. Virginia Heffernan is I think she's a staff writer for the New York Times. For the magazine, maybe. She's written a lot for them and for places like The New Yorker and Wired, which I'm thinking you probably read some.
Right.
Right. This book has a weird subtitle that I don't love. It's The Internet as Art, and I can see how that would turn a lot of people off, which is why I want to say, bear with me. Ooh, another reason I think this would be good for you was as I was reading it, I kept thinking, I think I read it pretty close to when I talked to Jamie Golden on What Should I Read Next, which she was like episode 3, 2. She was very, very early.
Jamie Golden was episode 1.
She was episode 1?
Yeah.
What a way to start the show. If you haven't heard that, you should go listen to anything Jamie's done because she's amazing.
Which also means that was a year ago. So this has been in our house a while.
Maybe it has. Okay. So, but reading this, I thought, oh man, Jamie Golden would love that book. So I know tons of you have listened to that episode and really like her stuff and her show, The Podcast. And if you think, I want to read whatever Jamie Golden is reading, I don't know that she's reading this, but I think she'd enjoy it. So there you go. Okay, so Heffernan has been called, this is from the jacket, America's preeminent cultural critic. Does that sound interesting to you or super boring?
Maybe pretentious. I don't know about boring, but...
That's the part you're skimming. Okay, so it's called Magic and Loss. And I don't want to super explain this a lot, but here's the basic gist. She says that the internet has done amazing things for us, that some of the things that we can do with the internet feel magical. But she also says, ooh, and this ties in really well with the Cal Newport book. She also says that there is definitely a price we pay for the things we can now do on the internet. Like, I see my neighbors more on Facebook than I do in person, which is super convenient, but also it's a loss in a way of a different kind of community. And we email instead of snail mail, which is awesome and also a trade-off. So she talks about the trade-offs of the internet that we make both purposely and without even thinking twice about it, saying that if we at least examine what we're doing and why, we'll be able to make better decisions about the choices we make. And she just has this way of seeing things through a lens that we don't automatically, or at least that I don't automatically. And she points out different common experiences among human beings in a really interesting, thoughtful, engaging, highly readable way. And this book would be really easy to read just a few pages at a time, because it's not something where you need to follow her argument that unfolds over 30 pages. She's funny. She's a little potty mouthed at times. She's got a snarky tone. I think you'd like it. What do you think?
Is it naggy?
No. It's not naggy. And I can see when you see something like cultural critic that you might think it's very intellectual. And I think that she's writing for the New York Times.
Worried about the loss. You know, how heavy is it on the loss versus the magic? I might not want to give up the magical things.
I would say she's nuanced. Like she says, let's take a serious look, an honest look at what we gain and what we lost. Not because I want to like wag my finger at you, but because you notice interesting things when you're paying attention.
Yeah, I'm down.
Okay. Book two. Are you ready?
Yeah. What's book two?
Book two is Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage by Alfred Lansing. What do you think?
I thought it was great.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't realize you've read it. It's funny. When I think of Shackleton, I first encountered this guy when your sister worked at the Cincinnati Museum and was curating an exhibit. I remember a really sad story about puppies.
Not at the museum. In the book. There is a sad story.
I thought that was part of the exhibit. Photos of these really adorable puppies.
I actually just read it.
That were ill-fated.
Maybe 2 years ago. I mean, that I remember when she had the exhibit, but I didn't get into it at that point. I'm not sure why I picked it up, but I think it was maybe just a couple years ago.
That was my next question.
Why I picked it up?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And it totally seems like the kind of book you would like. Whenever I hear like John Krakauer has a new one out or something like that, I always think, oh, I have to get it for Will. Because you're that kind of reader, right? That's fair?
Yeah, I think so. And is Lansing that kind of writer?
I don't know. I bet there's a very interesting story there, but I don't know what it is. He died in 1975. And Endurance was published in 59.
Yeah,
I didn't realize
like
it was that long.
It took 50 years to do all the research on this. So.
Okay, very interesting. All right, then I have an alternate book too. This is not a new title to you. It is The One in a Million Boy by Monica Wood.
Oh.
Because I really want you to try this one for your own good, William.
Not a new title, no. So you did, that was Summer Reading Club?
Mm-hmm. It was.
Okay. I know everybody loved it and it has a red cover, but that's literally all I know about it, even though you've said I should read it several times.
So it's not that I've sold it too hard. I just
keep
saying it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Here's what you need to know. We have friends. Well, they're not friends yet. We have people drawn together through very unusual circumstances who would never have connected in any other way, who end up being important people in each other's lives when they're all going through very difficult times. Wow, that sounds weepy. Okay, so we have a 103-year-old woman who quite soon, once the story gets started, decides she's going to be on a quest to become the oldest licensed driver, I think. So we have lots of Guinness Book of World Records stuff going on in this story. We have a little boy with some kind of unnamed autistic spectrum disorder thing going on.
Okay.
Who's obsessed with the Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh.
And lists of items of 10. We have a down on his luck career musician who is doing the work and has really like made it as a guy who can pay the bills with his music, but has never made it big. And they are drawn together by something that happens and end up being really important in each other's lives. And they all go on their own kinds of journeys. And Monica Wood brings in, I think you would really like this plot line. I really did. Monica Wood brings in this Christian contemporary music band that's young kids, affectionately known as the God Squad, who hire Quinn, the 40-year-old musician, as a fill-in guitar player. And he becomes like a father figure to them and the guy who actually knows stuff, coaching them through. And then the God Squad has issues when one of their members goes off and decides he's actually an atheist. But that's a rather minor plot point. It's just one that I think you would especially enjoy. So the reason you wouldn't read this is because it has a cover that looks very whimsical and feminine. But the reasons you would are all the great characters. I think you would really like Quinn. I think you'd really like the kid. I think it would remind you of people you know in your life. And I think you would really like, I think Ono would get to you. So that's more than you've heard before. How does it sound?
That's way more than I've heard. So I don't have any reasons for not having read it yet.
Well, except whatever you're reading now. Because you got to feel like it, you know? I do think this would be better bedtime reading than deep work, if that helps.
That would help.
You wouldn't have to take notes.
That's true.
Although, you know, I always have my book darts handy. Okay, so maybe.
Yo, definitely. At this point, I feel like I'm on the hook for it.
Okay, so book three is not typical, what should I read next policy, okay? But is very typical how we do book recommendations in this household. I'm going to recommend a book I haven't read that I think sounds incredible, and I want to see what you think so you can sort it for me. Because, you know, it's summer reading guide sorting season, and I have like 9 bazillion books to read, and you pre-sorted them some last year, and you did a good job of it. Okay, so this is a book I brought home from SIBA in Savannah. It's called No One Is Coming to Save Us. It's by Stephanie Powell Watts. And here's the thing that made me pick it up off the table, despite the fact that Stephanie Powell Watts was just sweet as could be, super charming, just a lovely author in my, you know, 60-second cocktail party book interaction. Okay, so this is The Great Gatsby, modernized, set in the rural Carolinas. Is that enough for you? Can I stop there?
I think I'm actually nervous. I'm not sure.
Because of what they'll do to Gatsby?
Yeah.
Because you're not sure that sounds like a good idea? What?
There have been other like modern retellings recently.
Ooh.
And it just generally makes me nervous.
Okay, so our son is actually reading The Great Gatsby in this next quarter.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And Kirkus just came out with their review just in the last couple days, and they gave it a big fat star. However, we've talked about how, I don't think on the podcast, but in the Bogle household, about how Kirkus and I seem to have opposite tastes. If they love it, I hate it. If they hate it, I love it. But I just finished a novel that they starred that I thought was really great. So maybe either I'm turning a corner or they are. What do you think? How does that sound?
I'd be happy to find out.
That's the spirit. I like it. Okay, William, of those three titles, we have them all in our house right now.
Do we really?
Yeah, we do. So we're making, you could really pick up something and start it immediately. What do you think you'll read next?
So the One in the Million Boy, probably only because it's been on the list the longest. And I don't know, like you said, that's a better bedtime reading than say Deep Work or Magic and Loss. So I'll go with that.
I think I would like the sound of whatever you picked, but I really like the sound of that. And I can't wait to hear what you think.
I'll be sure to tell you.
You're better. Okay. Well, this was fun. Thank you for coming on the show 1 year later, 1 year and 3 months later.
I'm glad to.
Hey, readers. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Will today. I promise you, this was way better than our first Lost episode. Please head to the podcast site to let me know what you thought of my recommendations and to share your recommendations for what Will should read next. He's too polite to say it, but I'm sure he would love to get recommendations from someone other than me. That page is at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/61, and it's also where you'll find the full list of titles we talked about today. Stay tuned till next week for our special What Should Anne Read Next anniversary episode. To make sure you don't miss it, head to your favorite podcast app right now and hit subscribe. If you're on Twitter, let me know there at Anne Bogle. That is Anne with an E, B as in books, O-G-E-L. Tag us on Instagram to share what you are reading. You can find me there at Anne Bogle and at What Should I Read Next. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And as Rainer Maria Rilke said, ah, how good it is to be among people who are reading. Happy reading, everyone.